above the horizontal.
Pushes away from McCulloch. Thurston gets the ball to Morgan. Morgan crosses the 20. Comes away to O'Neill. Gets the ball. And Felder scored. Felder scored in the corner.
Welcome to Above the Horizontal, the I'm pretty sure soon to be extinct show about the NRL. I'm your host, Bo Nicholson. I'm joined by just the one co-panelist this evening, Chris Waring. We also will hear from the Big E later on. I probably let the cat out of the bag there a little bit at the start there. We're pretty sure that this will be the last season of Above the Horizontal. So for all the tens of thousands of listeners that we have, sorry to disappoint you. We've really enjoyed doing the show, but it's just so hard to coordinate getting everybody onto an episode and to to edit and all that sort of stuff with busy lives. So we're gonna call it quits at the end of the year. But before we get to that, we thought we'd try and finish the year off in good form. So we only got one of us on for this episode. Chris Waring, thank you for joining me. How are you going this week?
Yeah, just to demonstrate some of the difficulties of your role in hosting the show and Miles only have the capacity to read four words of a 600 word message. So, not too bad. It's post the West Tigers victory. So, it's one of the four times a year that happens. So, one of the more slightly joyous lead into the next NRL round.
I have good news for you. They have 5 wins this season.
Wow. Yep. Yep.
And they're only, that's the same amount of wins as the Eels. So there's a points differential of only 74 points. In the Eels' favor. With the Tigers yet to have a bye, we could have Spoon Bowl. We've been hearing about Spoon Bowl, round 27, Eels versus Tigers. It could be level peggings. Whoever wins does not take home the wooden spoon. In that scenario, do I need to ask you how you're feeling confidence-wise?
Well, we did beat Parramatta now in the annual West Tigers Grand Final on Easter Monday. So there's form there. If anyone actually watched the West Tigers game the other day, it would not give you any form that they could beat any relatively competent NRL team. The Rabbitohs certainly weren't that or aren't that anymore. So, Kieran took offense to, I said my friends, which obviously was not just a, only inclusive term. Obviously, you guys are my friends as well, but Kieran's been making fun of that terminology. So I will probably go to that game if it actually eventuates in the Spoon Bowl. It might actually be, it's kind of interesting that in light of the news you shared about the podcast, most likely being, in the last season, that I think maybe watching the West Tigers get crowned Wooden Spooners live, maybe the fatal blow to NRL interest that I could possibly have.
I like the fact that for the last grand final that we're going to cover, half of us will be in Japan. Probably not watching the game, maybe watching it. I don't know. It's going to be very, very interesting. Let's talk about what we're going to talk about today. So obviously there has been some news regarding Trell Mitt. We will be getting into that. I just want to talk about it from an ethical point of view, because, he's going to be punished. The game has been brought into disrepute, but we'll get into that. The Hall of Fame has been bristling with talent. There's been a whole bunch of inductees this year, including some women as well, but we'll be focusing on the men inductees on this particular occasion. We will be talking about the Rabbitohs and the Warriors, who have had poor seasons, and then we'll be giving our predictions, as well as hearing from the Big E for his predictions for round 25. So let's talk about Trell Mitt first. Now, you and I are both Trell Mitt fans, particularly as a footballer. I think he's one of those guys that if we're talking about the Hall of Fame in 15 or 20 years time, on talent and what he can achieve and what he has achieved in the game already, he could be in that conversation. Steve Renoff's in there. Why can't Trell Mitt? He's that kind of level of talent. But, you know, between injury, between poor discipline, between some off-field behavior, between what appears to be a lack of effort, he's come under fire a fair bit. And I think there's also been a racist element to some of the criticism that he receives from the general public. But that's not his fault. I guess what I want to know is, how do you feel about where Trell Mitt's at the moment? You know, we saw some glimpses of what he can do this year on the field. We've seen some glimpses of what he can do off the field. How are you feeling about Trell Mitt and the current controversy around the white powder substance and maybe his future even?
Yeah, you're right. I have a soft spot for Latrell Mitchell. I totally understand some people's, and I see it as well, annoyances in terms of, this is an awful pun to make, but like the white line fever he sometimes gets on the field, in terms of, you know, some, you know, grubby behavior, if you will. But, you know, in terms of, you know, origin setting, people aren't, you know, New South Wales fans anyway, aren't complaining, because that kind of, you know, pushing it to the limit, you know, that kind of intensity is what makes him so brutal, obviously, alongside his natural talents. And there is, I would say, there is no better player to watch when he is on and when he's firing. I think that's I would find, you know, people have their own preferences and whatever, but in terms of just pure devastation and like the perfect synergy of strength and skill, he's completely devastating. And I guess that's what is frustrating around, you know, just this part of his career where, you know, the NRL players don't have a large shelf life, all things considering. And, you know, there's just these things that impact that along the way. And you are right in terms of some of the critique online and abuse is just, it's just what it is. It's just flat out racism. It's coming from people that don't like that he will comment on, you know, First Nations issues for whatever it may be, and people just utilize this as an antagonism. I think something with Latrell Mitchell is that I think it bothers him. You know, I think it's obvious that it bothers him, and his name in. I just think he doesn't like. This is just, you know, this is just outside in. I don't actually know, but I think he doesn't like the some of the responsibilities that his profile brings, and I think it bothers him, and I think that it plays out sometimes when he's not in a specific mentoring kind of system. So, so I think with that, with the whole controversy now, with, you know, the alleged substance, the white powder, whatever it was, everyone knows what it likely was anyway. I think it's just
white line fever, right?
Yeah, the white line fever. But I just think, like, I don't personally care. Like, to be honest, like, it's whatever. But I think it's just another issue of just kind of what his career has been for the past, you know, 5 years. When it's ups, from, you know, remember how good it was when Souths were flying for that bit and he was in game two Origin, and, you know, and then it's kind of just jumped back. So I think his career is in a very interesting point. I think Wayne Bennett coming back is good news for him and for South Sydney, but you never know. Maybe just things have gone too far where he's just on this track where he doesn't like, you know, he doesn't like the profile, and it comes at a specific cost for, you know, online abuse and whatever, when it creates an environment where, you know, maybe he feels the need to distract himself with, you know, things that aren't rugby league related, with, you know, whatever he's doing and getting photographed as, which is, I totally, and to that point, I totally understand the criticism around, well, you know, like it's whoever that was has, you know, dobbed him in to whatever aspect, a friend or whatever, is I get that it's unfortunate, and I totally get that, but, you know, it's just one of those things. As a footballer, that's just, it happens.
Yeah, like I understand, as you said, like you don't really care about this particular incident because, like, what is he, 26 or whatever he is? Like, how many 26-year-old dudes with plenty of cash are doing recreational drugs, allegedly? You know, there'd be plenty. There'd be plenty with a lot less cash than Trell Mitt doing it. I come from a bit more of a hardline stance on drugs, which is something that I understand probably comes from this prejudice of being, you know, raised by rich parents that sort of in like, you know, no, drugs are bad. And I'm just like, I was like a good kid. So I just went, yep, cool. Drugs are bad. Awesome. And just like judged everybody for doing them. So I understand that I come from a different position on this. And my natural instinct is basically to be like, why the fuck are you doing it? You know, like, why are you doing it, man? Like, you don't need to. You're putting yourself in jeopardy. And I guess to the greater point, you know, all these players that are either doing this stuff in public spaces or surrounded by people that you can't trust or filming it themselves, as the Storm boys were that time, it's like, that's just dumb. You know, Valentine Holmes on the Instagram story, Mitch Kenny as well. You're just like, what? Like, how stupid do you have to get to be doing that? And I think it becomes a bit different. You know, you and I seem to have a different view on the drug taking itself, which is fine. But the bigger thing, as you say, is like, why are you even in this position? How did this happen? You know, like, you need to be taking your career seriously. You're getting paid a lot of money by this organization to do a job, and you haven't been able to for various reasons. But I also think that Wayne Bennett will be a good influence on him. He has been before, and Wayne Bennett just has that sort of magic touch with players. You very rarely hear about players stepping out of line with Wayne and living to tell the tale in terms of their careers. So time will tell. We are going to talk about the Rabbitohs in a sec. Actually, while we're here, let's talk about them. They've had a terrible season. A bunch of us predicted them being in the top eight. Some of us thought they would be a genuine premiership threat. They obviously are not. They're currently on 20 points, which has them at third last. You mentioned they did have a really good period there. And that's outside of that period, it's been abysmal, like frankly abysmal, to the point that you were able to sit there and say, well, the Tigers beat them, but, you know, that's not saying much because the Rabbitohs, you know. Where do you think it went wrong? A lot of people are willing to blame Latrell Mitchell, but I think it's got to be bigger than that.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to articulate. And yeah, I was one of those people. I'm pretty sure I had a South East Grand Final at the start of the year. So, yeah. I mean, half of that looks right, I guess. But, it's kind of hard to articulate. I think me and you should just take the L about Lachlan Ilias.
No, never. Yeah. I'm not submitting to Miles. Never.
Yeah. I mean, good thing he will never listen to this, so he won't know. So I think that's part of the... But I don't think that's the only reason either. Wasn't great, but I still think he was serviceable for what the skill in that team had. I think it was a combination of, a poor coaching. Obviously, when the coach gets sacked, it's pretty much writing off the season. That it's just a crazy decline that South Sydney had in terms of the latter half of last season and the first half of this season. It was just, you know, it was just crazy how quickly things just, fell apart. I just think it's a combination of everything in terms of, I don't think that forward pack is great. I think that's a fact. I got Michael Cheekham starting, for God's sake. That probably says something about the quality of your team. Or Tane Milne in the 17. So
Tigers legend, Michael Cheekham.
Yeah, Michael Cheekham. So I don't know. I think maybe there was a slight overinflation of the team, and then I think Cody Walker has aged in this season in terms of there's been a skill decline. I still think he's a good player, but and just the halfback situation, and then the Jack White signing, just kind of, he paid a lot of money, then he played centre, then he went to the halves where he looked good for a bit, but then he's just, I don't know. It's just a combination, I think, everything where it's just some player decline. Latrell Mitchell has just had a strange season where some parts great, some parts just awful. And yeah, and then I think there was a weird contract thing with Damian Cook, and now he's out the door. And then it's at that point where I'm actually unsure where, like, what the team will be like next year when Bennett's there. Like, is this just like a blip in terms of, look, this season's just a write off, we're actually still a good team, or is this like a, you know, the equivalent of, like, I'm not sure, a comparable team, maybe like, can Bennett get them to like where the Dolphins currently are again? Like, are they like a kind of 10-9-8 team? Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just a combination of all these different factors, and yeah, it's just kind of just falling apart really quickly when they were a really strong competitive team for a minute.
They have added a little bit of, well, a couple of players into the halves. Jamie Humphries, who debuted at halfback for the Seagulls, played really well in his one game, has been signed by the Rabbitohs. And of course, Lewis Dodds from St. Helens. I believe that's still going ahead, although I've heard that he's playing reserve grade over there at the moment, which is probably not a great sign. And they're losing, as you mentioned, Damian Cook to the Dragons. So I think Damian Cook, he's another example, kind of like Cody Walker, where he's still a good player. And he's very fit and he's a good hard worker, but he has lost a bit, hasn't he, Damian Cook? And Thomas Burgess is also heading off as well. I agree with you about their forward pack. They do have some absolute guns in their forward pack. You look at Cameron Murray, he's insane. You know, in a competition stacked with talent in the lock forward position, he might be the very best of them. And then you got Keon Kalomatungi, who played a bit of lock this year and looked really, really good there, and looks equally good on the edge at the moment. There's something there, you know. And then usually they would have Campbell Graham. That was unfortunate what happened in that situation, because he was primed for a really big year. But him being out, Whiten having to move into the halves, Johnston being in and out, he's also probably aged a bit too, Alex Johnston. Their backline does not look good. It does not look good. Tane Milne out the centres with Tass has gone backwards. Kennar's not a good footballer. Gagai seems okay. Like, they're struggling, the Rabbitohs, in terms of their roster depth. Can Bennett get the best out of them? Yes, maybe. I don't think they're in a premiership window anytime soon, though. Like, I don't think they're going to be like a top four team consistently. They might bounce in there and then back out or something. But like, can you envision that world where they start challenging in the next couple of years?
It's just like, no, to be honest. You make a point around, you know, the age. Like, Walker he's got to be old, right? He's got to be, he's nearly as old as Terry Evans, so I think he might be a year younger or something. So, like, you have to imagine there's a shift there at some point. Maybe that's just Whiten as the long-term six, and then, like, it's Dodds or something as the seven. I'm not entirely sure, but I mean, part of what's unknown about this is just because it's just such a, and just to link back to where we started, it was like, it's just such a hard, it's like what's going to happen with Latrell Mitchell? You know what I mean? There's so much intensity around the level of criticism of him as a fullback in terms of, you know, the work rate issue of like the modern fullback, you know, as a comparison to Dylan Edwards, who is nowhere near as skillful, but, you know, just has more, you know, just grit and grind behavior. Someone just beeps in on my street.
Cheers,
Wes. Yeah, so, you know, and then, you know, about Dry Gray, who looks solid, but I don't think he's a specific answer as well. You know what I mean? It's not like he's like a clear, like, oh, we have, you know. But then, you know, Latrell Mitchell at center, but then that's Latrell Mitchell and like a star-studded team where he can rely on the abilities and, you know, that high-pressure arena. So, yeah, I don't know what the answer is, to be honest. That's why I think it's just going to wait and see. There's no way they're a contending team, but I'm also of the belief, which I think is fair, is that, like, Wayne Bennett will improve this team. So, you know, where does that end them? I think they're going to go up a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, by, you know, a margin where they're suddenly a contender all of a sudden.
I think they can challenge for the eight. I feel like they could be in that sort of Sea Eagles kind of mold this year, where the Sea Eagles have had some really good form recently. They've surged up to sixth on the ladder. They'll almost certainly finish in the eight from here. Actually, I think they are confirmed in the eight now, mathematically. So, you know, like that's. I think the Sea Eagles and the Rabbitohs have something in common there. I feel like the Rabbitohs could do that. You know, like lower part of the eight. They have been there the previous couple of years, not including last year. Basically, like since their grand final, actually, they kind of landed in the bottom half of the eight, pushed it to a prelim, and then narrowly-ish missed the eight last year. I feel like that's kind of their realm. That's where they belong. They certainly don't belong this low. This low has been a bit of an aberration? Aberration? What am I thinking of? Anyway, I'm not going to edit this. Cheers, boys. Let's talk about the Hall of Fame. Now, the Hall of Fame has been expanded with a lot of names, very familiar to us in our generation of football watching. I wasn't quite old enough to see three of them play. I have seen some highlights, though, of a couple of them. In perhaps retirement order, I'm just reading this as... Maybe not retirement order. Anyway, Lionel Morgan is the first Indigenous Australian to play a test match for Australia in 1960. He's a Queensland legend, played 12 interstate games for Queensland as a winger, Lionel Morgan. So he's in the Hall of Fame. Les Boyd, beat the shit out of people legend from the 70s and 80s, is in there. Ben Elias as... the guy that probably revolutionized the way that hookers played is my understanding of he was very silky dummy half. And you see some of those great games that Balmain were a part of in the late 80s. And he was, just very silky. Steve Renoff, speaking of silk, beautiful runner of the football. Really, really great center for Brisbane Broncos. Then you've got the bunch of Storm boys, Cameron Smith, Billy Slater, Cooper Cronk, Greg Inglis. You've got JT from the Cowboys. You've got, and of course, Bulldogs legend, Jonathan Thurston. You've got Benji Marshall, a New Zealander in there, one of New Zealand's greatest ever players. And Sam Burgess is in there as well, cheat on his wife legend. So they've got, I'm not going to edit this, whatever. I don't care. Sue me. So I've got a whole bunch of inductees there. How do you feel about that list? By the way, I know that you haven't seen maybe the first few as well, but of the ones that we can comment on, how are you feeling?
Yeah, some of those ones where, you know, you just kind of rely on older heads, you know, as a reference point to the old people, but certainly the ones that I can comment on. I mean, I'll start with the personal perspective. You know, Benjamin Marshall is one of my, something I associate with pretty relatively good West Tigers times. Not always in completely successful teams, but certainly exciting, certainly competitive. And obviously he's in the 2005 grand final side. And, you know, even the teams where we lost in the semis, you know, the 2011, 2009, they were awesome teams. They were so good to watch. So, you know, in terms of, I guess, impact, you know, legacy, that people remember, I think Benji Marshall is right up there in terms of people who have made a lasting impact on the rugby league style, rugby league play, even for, you know, current halves, especially current Kiwi halves who, you know, all look up to him. You know, again, he certainly had issues, like, you know, downtimes in his career. He wasn't as consistently dominant as, you know, like a Thurston or a Cronk, but he also played in significantly worse teams. So I think that should be a consideration. So it was nice to see his name there. It's probably nice for him as well as a reward. So it's probably, you can see he's aged about 5 years in this 1 year of coaching the West Tigers. So I'm sure it's a nice personal accolade for him. Sam Burgess, not the longest NRL career, but, you know, certainly impactful, lots of memorable moments, grand finals. And yeah, all the Storm boys, obviously, Jonathan Thurston is, you know, a wizard. So they're all names that I associate with dominance, either consistency, dominance, or, you know, kind of revolutionary play, I guess, especially in the case of Marshall, of like, these mm-hmm. are players that I, you know, would associate with important, impactful from, you know, anywhere from 2007 to, you know, 2020. So, yeah, it was a nice, I think they did a good job. It was a nice list.
What do you make of the Les Boyd inclusion and the Daryl Broman controversy? For those that aren't familiar, Les Boyd, with a pretty disgusting act of Les Boydisms, I guess, broke the jaw of Daryl Broman during a game, and he received, I think it was like a 17-week suspension or something crazy for that, which was probably fair enough. The problem was that Daryl Broman was in the frame for representative honours with Australia, was playing really good football at the time, apparently, and the injury ruined that for him, and obviously he's quite aggrieved at it. Les Boyd being Les Boyd has probably never apologized for it properly. Les Boyd's daughter has come out being like, screw Daryl Broman. They're a very classy family. Love the Boyds. They're great. And Broman now, apparently, according to misgendering Algerian boxers legend Pete Bedell, has decided to boycott the Hall of Fame induction based on his long-running feud with Les Boyd. A lot of people are saying that this guy's a thug. He doesn't represent the best of rugby league. He certainly represents an era, and apparently he was a very effective player. But do you think that someone that has that kind of rap sheet should be celebrated in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, it's an interesting, I guess, ethical question. Yeah, I didn't know that about Pete Bedell, but that's funny. yeah, it's kind of because I still think in terms of significance, you can, for specific play, can still be recognized as, you know, a legendary player. But some of the reputation is impacting, you know, the, you know, your suspension record or otherwise. And I totally get Daryl Broman's annoyance or, you know, outrage at this, especially considering, like you said, the relative impact it had, the unknown impact in terms of, you know, can future representative honours and whatnot, you know, trajectory of career and all that. So yeah, it's kind of like an interesting moral question in terms of some of those things are like, you know, just, it might be a completely insane analogy, but when you look at like a musician and, you know, something that's questionable in their record, you know, about their, in their life or whatever, it's like, well, do we separate, you know, this specific aspect to, from the art, even if it had a role in the art creation?
Michael Jackson, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah, like a Michael Jackson, or, you know, I'm assuming there's literally no crossover audience for Sunkill Moon fans or and listeners of the Above the Horizontal podcast. But, you know, even Mark Kozelek of Sunkill Moon has, you know, allegations against him of sexual harassment.
Arcade Fire, like there's heaps of them.
Yeah, apparently I fucking look like Wynn Butler.
You do.
I fucking picture. Yeah, you know, getting his, you know, I'm sure all our fans understood that, know what I mean by the Sunkill Moon reference, but you know, the cross, you know, the aspect of looking at, well, would grubby behavior really impact in terms of like specific skill? Like, no, but in terms of people's memories and the impacting effect that would have, it most definitely would. And especially for someone like Daryl Broman, who has worked in, you know, on 2GB for 1,000 years, his experience has no doubt impacted the memory and the history that people think of a player like Les Boyd because he's broadcasting this annoyance with his act towards him. So it's kind of interesting that in terms of like how, you know, his role in media has affected, you know, either Riley or Romley. It's probably Riley, to be honest, but that specific legacy because he's been able to broadcast his, you know, crimes, so to speak. So, yeah, I would say no. I think no, but maybe like with an asterisk, I think there should be a discussion point like, hey, he might have been an awesome player, but he was also a complete grub. So, yeah, I don't know what the actual answer to that is, but my thing leans me towards like, well, no, it shouldn't dispute it.
Yeah, you're right about legacy and maybe Bremen's impact on the legacy, given his position, is that, you know, when people think of Les Boyd, they think of, at best, hard man. At best. At worst, they think grub, like grotty, thuggish player. So it's interesting that he's in there. But I don't know. Time will tell. They are announcing an immortal, by the way, just one. Apparently on Wednesday, so we're recording Tuesday night at this point. So the immortal has to come from the Hall of Fame, and Hall of people can be inducted into the Hall of Fame 3 years after their career. Now these are rules that have changed very recently, which makes me think that it'll be someone on this particular list that gets inducted into the immortals, which would make 14 immortals. Some candidates that I've heard being talked about are Ron Coote, Brett Kenny. It seems like Peter Sterling's gone cold. It seems like people have gone cold on that idea. Darren Lockyer, obviously, gets a lot of talk. He had a bit of talk last time this came around. And Cameron Smith, who has just been inducted into the Hall of Fame with the rules changed. Who would you go for as an immortal, by the way? And who do you think they'll go for?
Just from what I've read, and this is, you know, I'm just a sponge for whatever media I've consumed. I think it's going to be Brett Kenny. And I know a little bit about Brett Kenny. I don't have a massive frame of reference, so I kind of feel I don't want to comment in terms of, you know, I'm not going to just bullshit around the extensive career knowledge I have of Ron Coote, or, you know, I don't know really much about Ron Coote. I know a little bit about Brett Kenny. From just what I've read, I think it'll be him. I think in terms of when I think of an immortal, I think of someone like Cameron Smith. I think of the how long he played. He played 400 games. No one's done that. The length of consistency, the esteemed international and Queensland record breaker all around, one club, I think goes hand in hand with the Melbourne's, you know, leading the Melbourne Storm to the powerhouse they continue to be today since the events of the competition. So, Cameron Smith, I guess, would be my opinion is I've watched both their careers. I missed a little bit of Lockyer at the start, but so I would consider Cameron Smith over Darren Lockyer. So I also acknowledge there may be some bias, some recency bias to that, but. From what I've just read, and I just kind of, I don't know, my inkling was probably say Brett Kenny in terms of respecting or, you know, highlighting from that era and kind of acknowledging of like, well, we can make Cameron Smith an immortal in 5 years or 10 years. But yeah, I guess from that list, I would probably go Cameron Smith.
I don't know how they're going to go with this, because part of me sits there and says, make sure you get all of the ones that deserve it from the past first, and you can get Cameron Smith later, like you just said. But then part of me thinks, well, if you're not an immortal yet, like Ron Coote has been eligible for immortality since the concept was initiated by a champagne company, right? In the 80s, right? In conjunction with Rugby League Week. And they had four immortals to start with, and they were all from Ron Coote's era, give or take. And he wasn't chosen, right? And then they've had further opportunities down the track when they started introducing guys like Beetson and Proven and people that, yeah, jostled either side of his era. You know, that was Ron Coote's era. And he hasn't been picked. So part of me thinks maybe he's just not an immortal. Like maybe he's just one of those guys that is probably too good to be just Hall of Fame. but not quite in that echelon of immortality. So I wonder if they'll ignore him, and for similar reasons, we'll ignore Brett Kenny. And then that takes me towards, okay, who are some of those more modern players that are a bit longer retired than, you know, than the recent crop? And you go straight to players like Brad Fittler, Darren Lockyer, maybe Laurie Daly, but probably not. And I don't know. Like I think Lockyer is probably the next one. I think that's probably where my brain goes. I think of the available ones that I've seen, Cameron Smith is the greatest. I don't think there's much question about that. And he's got some good competition there with Thurston, Slater, Lockyer. But I'd probably give it to Lockyer, I think. I think he dominated in two positions, lengthy career, much like Smith, very consistent, an incredible record. Yeah, I'd probably go with Lockyer, but I can see what you're saying about Smith. And part of me thinks they're going to choose Smith because they've changed the rules to make it happen. So I think if I was a betting person, I'd say Smith, but I would choose Lockyer. Before we get onto the Big E, let's talk about the Warriors really quickly. They had a pretty bad year after a great year last year into a prelim final and the top four. They're on 21 points at the moment. They are not going to make finals. Shawn Johnson was probably the best player in the comp last year. He has not been this year with a combination of injuries and just bad form. They've had injuries throughout with guys like Chance Nickel-Klukstar. Wade Egan's been on and off the field. They haven't settled on a 5/8 after Luke Metcalf's injury. The forwards don't seem as effective. Torhu Harris has not been as good this year and has been injured as well. I'm a bit miffed. I thought the Warriors would have a slight slide. I didn't think they'd be a top four side again, but I didn't see them coming 14th or thereabouts, wherever they finish by the end of the season. What do you think about the Warriors? Did you? I vaguely remember, did you predict them missing the eight at the start of the year?
Yeah, I had them out of the eight. I didn't expect, are they 14th at the moment?
Yeah, they're 14th, and they're currently 7 points outside the eight with three rounds left, so they're gone.
Yeah, I was expecting like a 10th, to be honest, like a 10 or 11th around there. I was expecting a drop, but I wasn't expecting it quite to this extent. It's just, I don't know. It's been an interesting one. I don't know. Andrew Webster just annoys me on a personal level. He's too positive. Like, your team sucks. Just stop smiling. And Shawn Johnson is a bit of a flash in the pan, which is good. It was great to see him have that, I guess, career resurgence in the last year, which led them to the final. But then, yeah, I think part of it, it's been kind of understated, but, yeah, obviously they're going to have James Fisher-Harris arriving, and obviously it seems like there's been like some toxicity with Fenua Blake in that squad, so I think that's had probably some impact. Torhu Harris hasn't been the same player, but I know he's been pretty injured all season on and off, so I think that's had an effect as well. Shawn Johnson has just been bad. They've had lots of injuries, and like Metcalf, you know, went down fairly early. Tuivasa Sheck has kind of not been able to play in a position that probably best suits his ability. It's just kind of gotten, they have been playing awful. And even at like an effort as well. Sometimes it's just like, it's not that they're, you know, which suggests to me that there's issues in the squad for whatever specific reason. And it's kind of disappointing, I guess, from a perspective, because they sold out all their home games this year, the Warriors, which is cool, right? It's awesome that they've done that, but like they've been dog shit, and they're really not, you know, they're struggling to take advantage of the enthusiasm that last season brought them. So once that suggests that enthusiasm won't maintain forever if they can't get it, you know, back on track in terms of being a top eight team. So yeah, and you know, I think Fisher Harris will improve with that, but I'm curious to see what they do with the hard situation given Shawn Johnson's retiring and some of the aging of Tohu Harris and whatnot. But yeah, it's been a very disappointing season.
I have a couple of prompts for you there that you've sort of brought me to. One of them is that you mentioned that you're not an Andrew Webster fan. Now that sounds kind of personal. Like, I like that he's a bit chipper. I don't know. But like, you have described him in the group chat as being on fraud watch. So basically any coach that like gets coach of the year or something similar and then has like a bit of a slide, like Todd Payton has been on fraud watch many times with you. Billy Slater is now on fraud watch. So there's a few fraud watch, but he's on fraud watch. You're right about the halves. It's an interesting one. They have brought Jet Cleary to the club. He hasn't played first grade yet, obviously. I think he's still playing Jersey Flag. You know, they got Tamari Martin, who has a pretty decent record at halfback this year. Luke Metcalf's a pretty good player. Chanel Harris-Tavita has always had upside, hasn't seemed to quite capture that potential. And then they got Jet Cleary coming through. It will be interesting to see how they go. But with that combination of question marks that we have in that key positions, and their coach being on fraud watch, how do you think they're going to go next year?
I think Martin and Metcalf probably be the go. I think some injury luck would help. They've definitely had issues with that. It's one of those things where like you just get asked about so many teams. You're like, oh yeah, the Rabbitohs are going to improve. Oh yeah, the Eels are going to improve. It's like, well, what team is not going to improve? You know what I mean?
And yeah, in terms exactly. Of
the competition is that probably indicates the competition is just getting stronger overall, but it might not actually result in any movement up and down the ladder. So I don't know. I want to say they'll improve, but I'm also like, well, who's like, is there any team that's going to massively fall off that's currently, you know, in any position that's higher or lower than them? For example, like, you know, to your team, you know, not your actual team, but your real favorite team, the Titans. One would suggest that they're showing signs at the end of the season in different parts of like they're gonna be better and one more season under Jess Hasler. So it's like we can say this about all these teams that are showing some such signs. To me, the Warriors haven't showed much signs, to be honest. It's just a matter of, well, we'll get James Fisher-Harris in there. And, yeah, we'll just hope no one else gets injured. So, I don't know. I don't know, to be honest. I don't really see a way, a specific strong path upward without any, you know, kind of major event happening at the other clubs that have entered them.
Especially with a fraud of as a fucking coach. Let's talk to somebody that's not... Let's talk to somebody that's not a fraud. Let's talk to the Big E with his predictions for round 25.
Good. Hello, boys. I am going to do my Big E Benono tip of the week. Again, hello, boys. I'm doing a Big E Benono tip of the week for today. The first match I am going to cap against Manly Seagulls, Stedman and Waring Cup. And my next biggie been on the tip of the week for today. I'm going to tip the Bulldogs, Doggies, with the Monix team. And after this one, I am going to shout out between me and my brother Kieran. We are going there this Friday night. I'm also tipping the Broncos against Panama the Eels. We are going to the Soccer Stadium. Let's go, Bronx. Tipping the Parent Thunders. Tipping the Storms, tipping the Knights for you, Wendy, tipping the Roosters, and tipping the Sharks. And that is my biggie, phenomenal tip of the week. And I'm also going to say congratulations to the Cowboys. They won again. That's good. And my bold prediction, I'm going to say Jesse Bolt, Hammers out of life, Vito. And also, yeah, Hamasaki of La Vida, and JC Baldwich, and the other player I also know, regular try, so three of them. will get a try. And of course, the winning goal is to Mimba Sakho. Yeah, and the other player I just remember is Mark Nichols. Yeah, so Mark Nichols takes the ball twitch and Hamza Tablavido, we get a winning try, and Jimmy Masako get a winning goal. That is my bold prediction, boys, and this is a biggie doing my biggie been on the tip of the week. Cheers, boys, cheers. And also, Manly. Yep, that's it, boys. Cheers, boys, cheers. Biggie out. Hoof hoof.
That's why.
What the hell was it? What the hell was the Manly chant at the end there?
he's obviously been told that one by your brother after he went to Brookvale with you and Stedman.
Yeah, that felt personal.
Oh yeah, they're playing the Tigers in the Wearing Stedman Cup, as he calls it. that's why I usually edit the heck out of our episodes, because they the Big E, he'll sometimes just wind up and just keep going, and it's a thing to watch. I am just going to leave it fully intact, Big E. Thank you for your phenomenal predictions for round 25. Let's get Chris's. Chris, how are you feeling about the Wearing Stedman Cup, the Tigers versus the Sea Eagles on Thursday night from Leichhardt?
Not great. If there's any sense of humiliations, that's, you know, Tommy Talao and Luke Brooks are having a good season. So I'm sure they'll, you know, utilize that, put that to the sword against us. You know, that the, yeah, I don't know. Junior Tupo is back. That's new and exciting news. But yeah, like the Big E expressed, I don't have much, I don't think there's much confidence with Tigers.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the Seagulls as well. I usually will back the Tigers in. I did last week against the Rabbitohs, but I think the Seagulls are playing too well. they've renamed Go Media Stadium this week to Sean Johnson Stadium in honor of Sean Johnson's, I assume, last home game there against the Bulldogs, Warriors versus the Bulldogs. How are you feeling about that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's, the Bulldogs are flying. But, like, you just think that it's, like, Sean Johnson means a lot to the Warriors, and they're going... Could you imagine they just, like, lose 48-0 the stadium? I'm going to take the Warriors based not on form. I just think they might get up for it. So, yeah, I'll take the Warriors.
Yeah, fuck it. I'll back him in as well. I was going to go for the Bulldogs, but you won me over. Broncos versus Eels later that night at Suncorp Stadium. How are you feeling?
Yeah. Broncos are still technically alive, I think. Is that right? I think they need to win all three plus results to go their way.
Yes, it's pretty unlikely. Yeah. But if the Eels are indeed to win the Wooden Spoon in the Spoon Bowl and the Broncos are to make it, then the Broncos need to win.
Yeah, so I want Parramatta to lose. So... I think, yeah, even with that, I think the Broncos should win.
A couple of key outs with no Reece Walsh and no Ezra Mamm makes me a little bit worried, but I will also go for the Broncos at home with the Big E and the Big K in attendance at Suncorp Stadium. Saturday afternoon, GIO Stadium, Raiders and Panthers. Panthers aren't going to drop too many games, and they did drop one last week. I've got the Panthers. What are you thinking?
Yeah, same. Raiders are probably in a bit of a downward spiral at the moment. You know, Ricky Stewart just keeps screeching and screeching at them, but nothing seems to be working. I actually read today that the Tigers are a chance to sign Corey Horsbrough, which is hilarious. Can you just imagine him and Alex Seyfarth in the field at the same time? Definitely helps just... the constant sibling that faces the stupid ass team. I think a good logic is don't tip against the Panthers when they lost the last week. So I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to tip the Panthers.
Yeah, me too. I'm the same. If they do indeed sign Horsbrough at the same time as Seyfarth, maybe they can have some sort of thing where they They alternate them. So one of, like, say Seyfarth starts on the bench and replaces Horsburgh, so you can only have like one headbutt enforcer on at the same time. It just sort of minimize your chances of infringements.
Yeah. It's a, to, in honor of Keith Galloway, we just get to rage at redheads.
Yeah, who is in charge of recruitment these days? Is it Keefe himself? Is that what's happening there? Oh, boys. Anyway, next one is Storm and Dolphins from Amy Parker. Storm have all but sealed up the minor premiership. The Dolphins really, really need this one. They're starting their ninth now. They're one win outside the Dragons. The Dragons are probably the only team they can mathematically jump, unless the Cowboys have a Barry last couple of weeks. So, do or die for the Dolphins. Storm might take the foot off the pedal a bit. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I can't see the Storm losing. Yeah, the Dolphins they just don't have the skill. I think it's just skill power that they overachieve, and they have done so for their two initial years, which they should be credited for. But yeah, I think similar to the Raiders, but not as extreme. I think they're just starting to feel the pinch in these last couple of weeks, and I think they'll continue to fade. So still.
Yeah, me too. Sorry, Big E. I don't see your bold prediction of the Hammer, Jesse Bromwich, and Mark Nichols all crossing the try line. I tried to talk to the Big E. I tried to say, mate, the more people you pick, it doesn't enhance your chances. It makes it worse. Like, imagine if Mark Nichols and Jesse Bromwich both score and the Hammer doesn't. He'll get his bold prediction wrong. Like, that's just not... But if he gets it right, wow. Anyway, and Jermaine Isaacco, winning goal, apparently, according to the Big E. I'm going to go for the Storm as well. The Rabbitohs and Knights, the Big E tipped Friendies Knights. Who are you going to tip? No Cody Walker this week. Dean Hawkins is our halfback.
Dean Hawkins, AI generated legend. I don't know. I'm going to go Knights.
They had Tyson Gamble, though.
Okay, I'm definitely going to Knights then. They had one of the worst 10 minutes of rugby league I've seen. They literally threw away that game against the Sharks. I think the stat was they completed 1 of 7 in like the last, like the 20 to 10 minutes before the last 10 minutes. So, yeah, I'll go the Knights, but I'm really not sure about that one.
That was really costly for the Knights. They're now 2 wins behind the Dragons. And if they had of one held on against the Sharks, they would be 10th, but equal 9th with the Dolphins. And 1 win outside the 8. So still in with a decent chance. But and with a better points differential than the Dragons, who would be a bit above them. So, like, you know, all these things could have worked out very differently if they just held on at the end of that game. But alas, they didn't. They're still a better team than the Rabbitohs, though, right? I'll do the Knights as well. On Sunday afternoon at Seabus, the crowd will be rocking to see the Titans against the Roosters. Who are you going to be rocking your tip into? Gee, that was terrible. Sorry. Cheers.
Well, as we're aware, no team gets refereed like the Titans, so Pack Stadium may intimidate the referee to some extent, but the fix is in. The Titans, I don't know. They kind of were okay for a bit, but I feel like they've kind of reverted back to being crap. So, I'll go the Roosters. I think they're a bit of lower team bullies, so I reckon, I'll go the Roosters.
Yeah, we'll be talking about the Titans probably next week or next time we have an episode, because they are definitely outside the 8. They're not going to make it. And the Roosters have a great chance to really lock up a top 4 spot. So, and potentially, with no Nathan Cleary, they might even jump the Panthers. They're only 1 win behind them with a better points differential. So if they can win these last few games, they give themselves a great chance of sneaking into the top two, which means home semifinals and a home prelim potentially. So, yeah, Roosters for me as well. And the last game is the local derby, the Dragons against the Sharks. They'll be playing that at Wynn Stadium in Wollongong. Dragons are in eighth at the moment, one win clear of the Dolphins, as I keep saying. The Sharks are in fourth, one win clear of the Bulldogs. And in theory, the Sharks also have a better points differential than the Panthers and are only one win behind them too. So if they go on a roll, they could secure a top two spot. So, you know, two teams with a lot to play for. Dragons are at home. Who do you like?
Yeah, I'm going to go the Dragons. I just think, I'm going to be honest, I will give credit to Shane Flanagan. He's done a good job with that team. I famously, you know, 20 people listen to this podcast, but
hundreds of thousands, remember?
Yeah. I made fun of the Dragons at the start of the year. Just based
me
on
too.
The team. And of course, now they're sitting in the top eight. So, yeah. And to top that off, Jacob Little has been genuinely very impressive this season. So just another Tiger thriving out there. So I just like them as well. I like how they play. They can be a little bit inconsistent. But, yeah, the Sharks weren't impressive last week. They kind of got lucky that the Knights shit to bed. So, yeah, Tom Hazelton's back there on the bench.
Like that.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Dragons. I think they'll be good enough to get over the Sharks.
Have they found you?
Cheers, boys.
It's over. So that's another reason we need to shut down the podcast. I will go for the Sharks. I will be, yeah, you'll be in jail for whatever you've done. I'll go for the Sharks. The Dragons, I don't know. It's a bit of an omen right now at the moment, right? With this win-loss thing they've got going on. And they had, obviously, a pretty good win against the Titans last week. So Sharks riding high after a bit of Daniel Atkinson. He'll have a lot of confidence. Brayden Trindle comes back in. He improves that team. Yeah, I'll go to the Sharks. Chris, that's the episode done. Thank you very much for being good enough to join me at relatively short notice. I texted you at 10 to 8 and you're like, oh, fuck, that's right. And then you jumped on.
Yeah. I did agree to it, specifically say I'll definitely be free, and then I fucking forgot. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks very much. Good luck to you, by the way, with the wearing Stedman Cup. It's always are you thinking about heading down to Leichhardt to soak it in while you can?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to waste my money. yeah, on a Thursday night as well.
Cheers, boys. All right. Well, thank you. And thank you to the Big E for his contribution. Thank you to Miles Stedman, as always, for staying away. And thank you to the audience who have stuck by us throughout the various seasons so far. We started back in 2020. It was the brainchild of Miles Stedman, and me and Kieran were the first panelists, and then Chris and Friendy joined us later, and the Big E, of course. And then Miles just proceeded to never return, I guess, in a weird kind of twist of fate. But this has been a really great show to do. We will continue to finish the season. We will do some season reviews and previews for next year, this year, but then we'll be calling it quits. So if you want, you can subscribe and listen to the rest of those episodes and have some fun with us, because we will be a lot more relaxed now. The editing will not be as tight as it used to be. It's going to be a bit, how you going? There'll be swearing and all. If the C word jumps in, I'm not going to put the people thing in anymore or whatever. So do join in and have some fun with us for the last few episodes. But until the next one. Above the Horizontal is a rugby league podcast by the fans and for the fans. It's produced by our entire team of former writers for Real Sport, including Daniel Friend, Christopher Waring, Miles Stedman, Kieran Gibson, and me, Bo Nicholson. We'd love it if you could support us by telling a rugby league fan about us so they can go above the horizontal as well. Thanks for listening. See you next time.